from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Well, 2013 was certainly a big year in the life of the Church, and this week on Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello will review the biggest happenings in 2013 with Alejandro Bermudez. He is the director of Catholic News Agency. Also later in our program, she'll talk with the Register's film critic, Stephen Graydonis, about 2013 on the big screen. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the Register. Jeanette, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tom.
Thank you so much. Our first guest, Alejandro Bermudez, is director of ASI Prensa. That's the largest Catholic news agency in Spanish, as well as the executive director of Catholic News Agency. Alejandro is a frequent contributor to the Register. He's also a regular host on EWTN's Spanish language programs. This year, Alejandro was very busy. He was one of the translators for Cardinal Bergoglio's words in the book On Heaven and Earth, Pope Francis on Faith, Family, and the Church in the 21st Century. He also conducted the interviews for the new book, Pope Francis, Our Brother, Our Friend. Today, Alejandro is with us. He'll discuss the historic and significant Catholic events of 2013. Alejandro, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you, Tom, and hello, Jeanette. I hope you are both celebrating a very blessed beginning of 2014.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed. We have had a good year so far. But, you know, I wanted to talk with you about what were we expecting last year at this time. We were definitely not expecting the tumultuous and eventful year that we had, but do you remember the expectations for 2013 at the very beginning of the year?
Oh, I remember very well, and I can steal temporarily the words of a colleague of mine who said, listen, if anybody at the beginning of 2013 would have told me that we will have the resignation of a pope and then the election of a first pope from the Americas, and that he will be so popular that will become the person of the year at Time magazine, I would definitely institutionalize that person. So crazy it was. So we were basically dealing with a church that now, in retrospect, sort of looked a little bit like a lame duck, in the sense of we had the wonderful, magnificent magisterium of Pope Benedict, but at the same time, an extremely hostile environment to the pontificate and to the church, who seemed not able to shake off from financial problems, Vatican Bank and the other issues of governability of the church. So
right.
It's a totally different time that we're living today.
Yes. So with Pope Benedict resigning, we had this wonderful opportunity to take a look at what he had given to the church. Before he actually died, we were able to remember and to commemorate and to enjoy and to look back at what Pope Benedict had given us. What are your thoughts about what that great strength of Benedict was?
Well, I think as time passes, the powerful and at the same time beautiful, intellectually challenged and challenging and rich magisterium of Pope Benedict will just grow in importance. We have to remember that it has been centuries that we haven't had a theologian of that quality and capacity as the head of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so I think his teachings, which you can see even in the encyclical that the Pope Francis took, Pope Francis' first encyclical, shows how the rich teachings of Pope Benedict have gone deeply into this pontificate.
Yes, it's true. And it all happened during the year of faith. What a great celebration of our faith. And now really Pope Francis has this gift, this energy. He's able to bring the faith into the secular media. I think AP, Associated Press, ranked Pope Francis the third biggest news story of 2013. What is it that is just capturing people's attention about Pope Francis?
Well, I think many aspects are at play here. I have posed that question myself, because when I see it around, I see different reasons that people give why they love Pope Francis. And we're not talking just people that are kind of ideological, taking advantage of what he says. I am talking about the significant number of people that I have seen really coming back to the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Seriously,
yes.
Honestly, yeah. Coming back to the Catholic Church. I am talking about that people. And I would summarize all of them in probably the fact that he brings that simplicity of the faith, the beauty and simplicity of the faith. And, you know, basically showing that being a Christian can be hard, but it's not complicated. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. It doesn't mean that it's easy, but it's very simple. So bringing back that simplicity and that beauty of simplicity, I think that's probably the core of his success as an evangelizer.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Alejandro Bermudez, the executive director of Catholic News Agency, and we're talking about Pope Francis 2013 and all that he has brought to the Church in this year. Now, Pope Francis has certainly given us so much. He's been in the news, and as you said, the really central factor is this: is he going to bring people back to the faith? And we've already seen the fruits of that. But one big event that sticks out in my mind in this year was World Youth Day. And those, close to 3 million, I think, people that came to see the Pope in Rio de Janeiro when he returned to his home continent. Tell us a little bit about the takeaways of World Youth Day.
Well, we were covering very close to one another, Jeanette, if you remember.
Yeah.
our positions at the large press office was very, very, very close. Although it was such a hectic time that we had very little time to comment a little bit on what was going on, but I think the takeaway of Rio is that basically the Pope took Brazil by storm.
Yeah.
And it is very important to understand a little anecdotal factoids that sometimes are not taken into account, which is: number one, Brazil is one of the countries in which evangelical Protestants have grown exponentially. And mm-hmm. one of the reasons of that growth has been the very poor pastoral and catechetical attention from the side of the Catholic Church. But also, and more important than that, is the tremendous secularization that Brazil has been living in the last probably 60 years. There is a mm-hmm. strong tradition of rejecting the Catholic Church, despising the Catholic Church in the elites and the media. So it's quite similar to the situation in the United States. But what happened with Pope Francis is that he brought together these a totally different feeling and approach towards the Catholic Church, a much better goodwill on the side of the elites, and the fact that much of the technical production of World Youth Day was so flawless and of such a high mm-hmm. quality. It's basically because for the first time in Brazilian history, the elites were actually committed to the success of World Youth Day. So just to give you a comparative reference, it is like having the smartest people from Hollywood being deeply personally committed in trying to make a visit of Pope Francis be totally successful if he comes to the United States. It's pretty much like that, what happened.
Well, it was felt that way. I mean, the music itself was just beautiful, and the Pope just seemed to enjoy it so intensely.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I took away most, was just seeing Pope Francis and how intense he was in every moment, whether that was a moment with the people, hugging the people in the crowd or touching the people in the crowd, or his intensity at the liturgy. He just deeply felt the moment and was giving himself to that moment. He has a beautiful gift of being present in the moment. And so, you know, this year, as the year closes, as the year begins, 2014, we're looking to many things. He's going to continue on with the reform, and he also will be naming some cardinals, so we look forward to that, to know who these cardinals will be helping him lead the church, and perhaps some other visits outside of Italy will happen again this year, perhaps to the Holy Land. So we have a lot to look forward to, but I think most of all we need to join the Holy Father in prayer. And Alejandro, we'll continue to follow the coverage of Catholic News Agency and all the good work that you're doing there. So thank you so much for joining us for this show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for bringing me in. You know, I enjoy these a lot, so at least you can count on me whatever you want.
Oh, that is great. Thank you, Alejandro. When we return, how was 2013 as a year for movies? Well, it certainly wasn't 1939, I can tell you that. But Stephen Gray Donis is here. He's going to talk about the highlights of the year in film. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Colleen Carroll Campbell talks about the National Catholic Register.
We live in a secular culture today that's in many ways hostile to core teachings of our Catholic faith. That's not something we need to be angry and defensive about, but it is a reality that we need to recognize and grapple with. And that's where the National Catholic Register comes in. It's so important for Catholics to have a newspaper with a national perspective that helps them understand their faith and what's happening around the world, but especially in the church, from an authentically Catholic perspective, one that they can trust. And that's why I believe the National Catholic Register is an important tool in the new evangelization and to today's Catholics. In many ways, it's more important now than it's ever been.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the register, or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Stephen Gray Donis, is the Register's film critic. He also writes regularly for Christianity Today and Catholic World Report. Stephen's website, Decent Films, offers a compilation of his film critiques. Lately, his film writing has taken a bit of a back seat because of his diaconal studies at the Archdiocese of Newark. But over the Christmas holidays, Stephen got a little bit caught up on the films of 2013, and he's here to talk about some of them. Stephen, welcome again to Register Radio.
Tom, it's good to be back. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Stephen. It's so good to have you. You know, the biggest question I've been wanting to ask you is, when you got back from your diaconate studies, those were done, and you were jumping back into film, what was the first film you were looking forward to seeing?
That's a good question. You know, this has been, for Hollywood, a pretty terrible movie year. Most of the movies I was looking forward to, the big pictures, whether it's the summer action movies like Man of Steel or The Lone Ranger or The Animated Fair, Despicable Me 2, DreamWorks Turbo, Disney's Frozen, most of the year I was disappointed and let down. But there are, were some smaller films that I've been hearing about from some of my friends. Some of them have been raving about, and I've been looking forward to catching up with a small indie film that probably the vast majority of our listeners have not heard of, and I'm just ecstatic. The movie is This Is Martin Bonner. That's B-O-N-N-E-R. It's the debut film from writer-director Chad Hartigan, and it's a brilliant adult drama about a man, an older gentleman, who works with a faith-based prison ministry in which prisoners are offered work programs and mentoring, and possibly this will help them in their in their hearings. And it explores the different ways that people relate to faith in the postmodern world, from simple, untroubled piety to struggles with doubt and angst while still seeking in some way for God. The writer-director is not himself a believer, but his parents were missionaries. And even after he lost his faith, he said he still is bothered by the way that Christians are not portrayed respectfully and sympathetically in Hollywood. And he wanted to do something about it. And in This Is Martin Bonner, he has made an absolutely brilliant film.
It sounds like a great film. How can people see it? Where do they go?
It's streaming on Netflix right now. So you can see it on Netflix. It's also available on DVD and Blu-ray.
Excellent. Well, that's a good pick. Now, let me tell you what I saw this year, and you can tell me how I did. So I saw The Hobbit, the second one, The Desolation of Smaug. I saw Elysium, Despicable Me 2, and Gravity. So how did I do in terms of movies for this year?
I think you pretty much ran the gamut. Gravity was one of my favorite movies of the year, starring Sandra Bullock. It's a stripped-down popcorn action movie that brilliantly portrays the zero-G world of outer space and offers what has been sadly lacking in most big-screen Hollywood fare these days, which are some intriguing spiritual themes. You've got prayer, mm-hmm. You've got the idea of survival of the soul, and in general, a thirst for transcendence in a secularized culture. So kind of almost a pop exploration of some of the same themes that you find in This Is Martin Bonner. Elysium, the follow-up film from Neil Blomkamp, the director of the brilliant but very difficult to watch District 9. It's another difficult film that bites off a lot of socially intriguing themes related to inequality, healthcare, immigration, and so forth. But ultimately, I think, devolving into too much meaningless action and violence and with an absurdly simplistic ending. Mm-hmm. So a film that really shot higher than it ultimately was able to achieve. The Hobbit offered eye-popping spectacle, but for me, it really buried the charm and the humanity of Tolkien's tale even more deeply than the first Hobbit film. So other than the just the look of Smaug the dragon, who's probably the best movie dragon I've ever seen, and some crazy action sequences in the barrel riding sequence, I was really left cold by The Hobbit.
Yeah, that's too bad, huh? Now, what movies should I have seen? What were the must-see films of 2013 that I missed?
It was a good year for Tom Hanks. Captain Phillips, a fact-based thriller by Paul Greengrass, explores the ordeal of a shipping captain who was taken prisoner by Somali pirates and rescued by Navy SEALs. It's one of the best thrillers of the year.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that as well.
He's also very good in Saving Mr. Banks as Walt Disney against Emma Thompson's P.L. Travers, the creator of Mary Poppins, in a fictionalized take on Disney's attempts to make the movie version of Mary Poppins and get Travers to sell him the rights. I enjoyed that film a lot, and so did my wife Suzanne. It was a great year for fact-based films about the African-American experience. Chiwetel Ejiofor is fantastic in 12 Years a Slave as Solomon Northup, a freeborn black New York native who was kidnapped and sold into slavery before the Civil War. This is an extremely difficult-to-watch film with some very graphic content, so strong content advisory warning there, but a brilliant and really essential film. Forrest Whitaker is very good in Lee Daniels' The Butler in a much more fictionalized tale on a black person who worked in the White House for seven administrations from the 1950s and Eisenhower to the 1980s under Ronald Reagan, rising to the rank of head butler and finally achieving some measure of equality between the black and the white staff at the White House under Ronald Reagan. The film gives Reagan credit for that, although otherwise it devolves into a Democratic campaign commercial, which is unfortunate. Fruitvale Station, small film about the killing of a black man in the Bay Area in San Francisco, which is coming out on home video in just a couple of weeks. One of my favorite films of the year.
I have some movies to catch up on. So. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Stephen Gradonis, the Register's film critic, about the films of 2013. Now, Stephen, you know, one of the conversations you had with Dan Burke once really enlightened Dan, and I wanted to share that conversation with the rest of our audience. You were talking about the difference between film criticism, a film critic like you, and someone who just comments on a film, perhaps from a faith-based perspective or something like that. What's the difference there between a film critic and someone who's just commenting on film?
Well, Pope Pius XI, in his 1936 encyclical on the motion picture Vigilante Cura, assesses movies within the context of what he calls, quote, the great gift of art. And there are two ways of looking at any work of art. Let's take a sacred work of art, whether it's an icon or Bach's Mass in B minor. When I'm in church, I want art that lifts my heart and my mind to God. I don't want to be distracted by the artist's technique. I want to think about God, not the art. And in that vein, Christians often think and talk about movies and books in terms of their message, or even just use them as a springboard to talk about moral or religious themes that they want to talk about. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there's also a time and a place for analyzing the work in itself, in its totality. And Bach certainly didn't write the Mass in B minor without caring a lot about technique. And we can't fully appreciate what he did and why some sacred art is better than other sacred art if we don't look at art in a more critical vein. It doesn't matter whether it's some European art house film or a Hollywood cartoon or action movie. I love a quote from Pius XII in his 1955 Discourses on the Ideal Film, in which he says that even superficial entertainment can achieve a certain ideal status, since, in his words, man has shallows as well as depths. I love that quote, and I think about it every time I sit down to a comic book movie or something like that.
Well, wasn't it Pope John Paul II who said he enjoyed Star Wars, the first one?
I don't know about that, but I do know that Pope John Paul II screened a lot of movies at the Vatican. I know that he saw Life is Beautiful with Roberto Benigni and many others as well.
Well, Stephen, you know, one of the thoughts I had was you have seven kids, and you know, these seven kids must watch movies with you, and they probably have the same enthusiasm for the movies as you do. Did they have a favorite this year?
You know, I think for animation in particular, for me and for my kids, it was a pretty disappointing year. Some or all of us saw a number of the animated films this year, Cloudy with Meatballs, Despicable Me 2, Disney's Planes. I think our favorite of all of the Hollywood animated films was probably Pixar's underachieving prequel, Monsters University, which is fine, but not great. Actually, the best animation I think we saw, the only animation from Hollywood that really got us excited, was the animated shorts that played before Disney's Frozen, which was Get a Horse, and then Pixar's Monsters University, which was The Blue Umbrella. Those short animated films, which Pixar has really brought back, often give filmmakers a chance to be creative and to explore concepts that you might not be able to sell as a feature film.
Yeah, they really are great. You know, my husband, he in the afternoons and the evenings when he's trying to relax, he goes to YouTube and he watches, you know, these short animations, and I just hear him laughing his head off. it's really a great way to, you know, just take it easy and relax. So those are great shows to bring up. Now, what are we looking forward to? Is there anything particular we're looking forward to in 2014 as we get ready to close the show here?
I haven't spent a lot of time looking ahead to what's coming, but one film that I am looking forward to is Darren Aronofsky's Noah. There are a number of biblical films in development, at least two or three which are actually coming this year, and some of which I have no idea when they're coming or even whether they're coming at all. But Aronofsky has been interested in the Noah story for a long time. He did a graphic novel on it when he was in college, and his take is certainly not going to be straight out of the book of Genesis, but I will be interested to see how he interacts with the Genesis story and how his film fits in with the tradition of flood narratives from cultures all over the world.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, and I'm looking forward to catching up on some of these films you've mentioned that I haven't seen. And Stephen, I'm always grateful for the work that you do. People can find your critiques and your recommendations at the Register's website, ncregister.com, but they could also find a compilation of your work at decentfilms.com. So we encourage our audience to go to those websites and follow what you do, and we just really appreciate all that you do, even in the midst of your diaconate studies, which, how much longer do you have?
I've got a year and a half down, so that's 2.5 years to go. It's a four-year program. We are the class of 2016, so we're certainly looking forward to that.
Excellent. Well, we'll pray for you as you continue those studies, and we are grateful for all your work.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Stephen. Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, brothers and sisters. This is Jim and Joy Pinto for Marriage and God's Plan. It's wonderful to be with you. A very important aspect to marriage and family is the choosing of the words that we say to one another. The scriptures teach us that blessing and cursing are in the power of the tongue. And we want to be people through our speech that bless one another, that blow upon the sail of the other one, so that our words facilitate what God says about that person, what God wants for that person's life. So it's important that we choose words of high value. I often say to Joy, you are as my breath, you are as my life. I love you, you're my bride. Words that build up, words that do not tear down.
In marriage, it's so important that we guard our tongue, especially with our communication with one another and with our children. No spouse wants to leave the house being discouraged and beaten down by a nagging wife. No child wants to walk out the door discouraged and broken and unaffirmed. And so as mothers, it's our job to fortify our children, to strengthen them with words of love and high value, and to assure them that we are for them and we are their best cheerleader.
Marriage and family is God's plan for the transformation of the world. And the words that we speak, the hope that we give, and the words that we share go a long way to empower our spouse and our children to take the gospel to the whole world. Let us choose our words wisely and lovingly. This has been Joy and Jim Pinto for Marriage and God's Plan.